Thursday, July 13th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight we talk about the horrors and ordeals of trying to move all of our stuff from Rochester, New York to Beacon, New York.
Let's do this!
I'm sitting in my office all alone today, and some people walk in.
Did they catch you doing anything bad?
No.
No?
I go and I see and these two young guys. One guy, he said he was 24. The other guy was 30-something. Whatever. And they were door-to-door salesmen, which I didn't realize at first. I was like, did anyone from my company tell you to come here? Did you know, because
yep.
People from my company don't communicate with me so much. So if they were sending someone, I wouldn't know.
Man, how many people would kill for jobs like what we have?
Yeah, and they said that they were from a company that does Ricoh copier service stuff. And I had a Ricoh copier right there. And they didn't even realize it. Like, they were going door to door, and it took me like a whole minute to get that out of them. So anyway,
wow.
You know, they looked at my copier a bit, and I tried to get them to do some stuff for free, but they wouldn't.
What'd you try to get them to do?
Set up the copier to do like the scanning properly.
That's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, I think they were too smart to do anything without actually getting a service contract. Anyway. But you know, as time went on, I proceeded to just kind of sit down and talk to these guys and hang out for like 20 minutes and talk about stuff.
Did you tell them about Geek Nights?
No, but I talked to them about, you know, geeks and nerds and video games and all kinds of stuff. One guy was like, you know, man, you should get on the Craigslist. And I'm like, yeah, I know all about Craigslist. He's like, yeah, you could use it. Like, one guy was only...
What? That's like a guy coming up to me and saying... Yeah, there's this internet.
No, but it's like one guy, it was all into video games, the older guy, and the other guy was all about ladies. That's all he was like, man, you could totally like get some ladies right in here.
Really?
And I was like, yes, the thought had occurred to me before. But the problem is like, you never know, the CEO can just show up randomly, and then what do I do?
You know what? You do what George Costanza did. You ever see that one episode of Seinfeld where he got caught having sex with another employee?
Nope.
He goes it like, they fire him. Like, they call him in, like, the boss calls him into the office the next day. And he's like, George, it has come to my attention that you engaged in blah, 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 blah at your desk. And George sits there and says, was that wrong? Was I not supposed to do that? Because if there wasn't a memo or anything, so I wasn't entirely sure if that was against company policy or not. You see, and he just goes on and on and on.
I have a feeling that if I'm doing some random girl from Craigslist, well, semi-random girl from Craigslist in the office and the CEO shows up, I'm going to be fired.
See, now one, you probably would love to get fired. So not only would that give you an awesome story, and it would give you an excuse to leave that job.
But it would lose me a whole reference for the next job.
No, because the people call and say, yes, he was employed by us. Yes, he did great work. Why'd you fire him? Because he made it with some woman in his cube.
Not in my cube, in my entire empty office.
And then they think, ooh, he was the manager of an office somewhere. Plus, when you go to another job and they ask, why'd you leave your last job? You say, I was fired, and just tell him exactly what happened.
No, but I might, you know, put a thing on Craigslist, like, I am a geek. Is there a geek girl out there?
You know what? You should, because if nothing else, we'll have some awesome stories to tell on the show about
that. At the absolute worst, I get no emails whatsoever. At the absolute best, I get laid. At the absolute minimal in between...
Honestly?
There are some emails that'll be humorous.
You should check out Otaku Booty.
You know, it doesn't seem to happening, actually.
Yeah, well, the thing is, from what I can gather, it seemed really happening when it started, and then... The horny kids who go to anime cons realize they didn't need a website.
Yeah, if only I was a horny teenager again. Oh.
Yeah, I gotta say, if anime culture...
Those were the days.
...and anime cons existed in their current form when I was between the ages of 14 and 17...
Well, see, I already had that. It was just not at anime cons. It was at some other kinds
of
cons.
Well, yeah, I had that too, but it was in band camp, but... Anime culture is just so far and away from that.
Yep, yep.
Though, you ran into some stealth geeks, I also found archaeological evidence of a geek somewhere in Beacon.
Archaeological evidence?
So I was riding my bike around today, you know, I was poking it, because I promised our friend Yuko, we explored a bunch of factories before, but the one I really wanted to, like, go in and show her the inside of, someone had locked it. So recently, some kids had unlocked it, and I've been going by it periodically to make sure it's still unlocked and I can still get into it. And As I was biking around, I pass a park bench and I sit on it to retie my shoe. And then I see there's graffiti on the park bench in marker. And one of the graffiti says, very specifically, Inuyasha rocks! Exclamation point heart.
Sounds to me like some girl from Beacon High School.
Yeah, but you know what? A geek's a geek.
Yeah, but it's not someone useful to us.
Hey, finding any geek would be an advantage at this point, because as far as our lives have gone...
All I can say is that if girls from Beacon High School start showing up, I'm gonna, you know, you're gonna be in trouble.
No, we put them on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
I would pretty much interview any geek that I met.
You heapophile, you.
At this point. I mean, if one of those homeless crazy guys on the street was walking by and he was like, grumble, 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 Master Keaton, I'd whip out a microphone and interview him.
Yeah, that would be great. And all right, so do you want to do the new segment?
Oh, the new segment that we don't have music for yet, but we decided to do over AIM about 7 hours ago?
Yep, we have a new segment, everybody. Guess what? We have a new segment.
It's called Geek Back.
Yes, every show from now on, before we do the news, we're going to do Geek Back.
Because mainly, a lot of other podcasts they get a lot of user or listener feedback. I almost said user feedback. And they'll, you know, read the emails and play the voice feedback, and then they'll talk about it every episode. And we get a lot of emails. Like, we get a lot of stuff from fans, but we always respond to it in email, and it never really sees the show. So it's like we're doing Geek Nights the show, and we're doing Geek Nights the forum, and we're doing Geek Nights the email personal conversation. And they're all separate.
Yep, so the Geek Back segment, what we are going to do is each show we will either play one voicemail, read one email, or, barring a lack of emails and voicemails...
Well, at least good ones.
Yeah, good ones. We will read something from the forum and then talk about it for a little bit. And this should hopefully, A, encourage more listener feedback. I don't know, make people feel good when we read their stuff on the show.
Yeah, because I can say, in case...
And hopefully it's entertaining.
For all the people who do email us and contact us, we do read every single one of them. And even if we don't respond to you, we talk to each other about it a lot.
And that will continue until the number of emails we get is too many. And it is not yet too many.
At which point, I think we'll start paying Mr. Period or something, and we'll get him to be a secretary and filter the email for us or something.
Yep. All right, so the email we're going to read today is from our good friend Beiwei Chang, who you might remember is our only PayPal donator as of yet.
Yep, I can say...
What did you do? What'd you do?
Now, I can say that I think... whenever we get money, I think, we're not going to use it on ourselves. We're probably just going to buy more equipment for the podcast.
Yeah, like more microphones, maybe some booms.
Yeah,
I need a boom guy.
I think for this one, for the money he gave us, I'm going to buy some sort of dynamic omnidirectional mic for our geek roundtables that we're going to be doing at Otakon.
Yep. So anyway, again, about the PayPal donations, don't pay us money.
Yeah, seriously.
You have the ability to give us money, but don't. All right, so let's read Beiwei's email. Rim and Scott, I was on vacation when I listened to your podcast in which you outed me as a PayPal donator to the show. Thanks, didn't expect that. You didn't have any place in the PayPal form to include a note, so I didn't get a chance to give you some kudos along with the dollar sign.
I like kudos.
I found your show via Mark Johnson's mention on Board Games to Go, and I was hooked by your podcast style. Great professional job you guys are doing. You really managed to keep a tight, interesting show going every night. Kudos. I've been catching up on all your other non-gaming shows, except anime, which I don't have any interest in, and they're fun and interesting. Hope you guys keep going for a long time. Use the dollar sign for whatever. Just want to support stuff that I listen to regularly. Also, you may have been the first folks who have ever pronounced my name correctly without hints and on air too. Cheers, Bay.
Yep, I gotta say, when it comes to names, if it's a nationality or a language we're at all familiar with, we usually don't have any trouble with that.
Yeah, I mean, if I see a name that I have no idea how to pronounce, I go with the phonetics, you know, hoping that someone romanized it correctly.
The only thing that'll get me is if it's written in Cyrillic. I can't read Cyrillic at all.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just read it the way it looks, which is completely wrong.
I tend to read, you know, I go for the phonetics, which means I pronounce things more often than most people, because a lot of people can't even manage that.
Yeah.
And then if that fails, if someone says it correctly to me once, then I'm good. Unless it's a tongue twister and I just can't do it. But that's so rare. Yep. So, thank you, Beiwei.
Yeah. Wow, we didn't have so much to say about that. Partly, I think, because we decided to do this bit before the show today, and then we talked for a while about name pronunciation.
Yeah, I think that...
And then we tried to talk about it again.
The only things I really have to say about it is, yeah, Mark Johnson has a cool podcast called Board Games to Go, where he just talks about board games.
Yeah, we should probably play his promo at some point.
I think we should play it Tuesday.
That was my plan.
Yeah, that's a good one. And, yeah, it's kind of weird people giving us props. We're still waiting for a hate mail.
Yeah.
The first legitimate hate mail is going to get into the Geekback section, so...
You know what? I think the first real legitimate hate mail we get, we'll send them a prize. Like, congratulations, you're our first hate mail. Thank you so much.
Yes, and we'll know if it's a real hate mail or not, so all you listeners looking for prizes, we'll know.
Yeah, if I get an email...
We're smarter than you.
From, like...
That's why you listen to us and not vice versa.
If I get an email from Pete saying, yeah, you atheists are all going to rot in hell... And, yeah, I'll know.
All right, so.
We got some news, and it's Thursday, so we can do whatever the hell news we want.
Because
we've kind of decided, originally we tried to make the news fit whatever day of the week it was, whenever we could. So if it was Tuesday, we try to have some sort of gaming news or related to gaming news. But lately, if you've noticed, there's been so much tech news that we've been just going longer and longer and longer on the news, and... Our show is basically Geek Nights plus the 20-minute twit.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're pushing ourselves back to that. Of course, now it's Thursday, so that gets shot to hell until next week. But I actually had a bunch of news that I'm holding off on now until the appropriate day. Because really, and actually someone who sent us some feedback we're not going to read yet on the air, accused me of editorializing.
What?
To which I say... We don't cover the news. We do nothing but editorialize. What do you want?
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this show, the news segment of Geek Nights is not to tell you the news and inform you.
I'd be talking about Israel right now.
Yeah, if you need to be informed, you need to go on the internet to Google News and read a lot.
Or FARC or Dig or anything.
Anything, Slashdot even. The point of us going over the news is we say, oh, look, this is a story that happened today. Now let us talk about it. You know, and we hope that the reason you're listening is to hear our interesting perspective on the events of the recent times.
Yeah, I guess, you know, Penn Jillette on his show always says, yeah, we take the nut position. I guess Scott and I tend to take the asshole position.
Yep, we take the asshole geek somewhat elitist position.
Yeah, because we're not going to pretend we're not just a little bit elitist.
Yep, at least on some things.
Yeah. We're very proletarian on other things.
Yes.
Namely, things that would give us a bunch of money that we could then use to become elite.
Aha!
Fair! Anyway, my news is actually video game related, but it's also a bunch of other things related. And it's something that I knew for a long time because of where I worked, and I couldn't say anything about it. And now, it's been released officially by other sources, meaning I can talk all I want. Sony has admitted that the yields... on the PlayStation 3 chips are terrible.
No, wait. Didn't you say that, you know, Sony ordered X chips and IBM gave them X chips?
Well, the thing is, IBM doesn't make all the chips because there are a lot of other companies involved.
Yeah, but we're talking about the cell chips here,
yes,
right?
Yes, the cell chips. I can't talk about this part in great detail. You asked about the one thing I still can't talk about. But IBM does not make all of the cell chips. IBM's primary thing is that they came up with the cell chip and they know all about it.
Uh-huh.
And manufacturing is licensed out to a lot of other fabs simply by the fact that Sony's 300mm and 200mm fabs, while very advanced, are not as big as the fabs that like AMD and Intel and Chartered and all these other
companies.
Of course,
AMD and Intel have the biggest fabs in the world. You can't really... And NVIDIA, I guess.
Yeah, but the point is just that the yields were low. Now, when you make chips... The yields are basically the percentage of chips that come out the end of your production line working.
Yeah, because when you if anyone who doesn't know, when you make chips, you make them on this big wafer. And the wafer has like a zillion chips on it, like hundreds of them even. And it's a big wafer of silicon.
They're really cool looking. I had a shiny one that was busted that I used as a mirror
for a
while.
Yeah, it's a big silicon disc. And on it are a bunch of chips like just laid out in a grid. and they cut the chips out because they're all little squares or rectangles. They cut them out and they test them individually, and some of them work and some of them don't.
Actually, there's some chips where they can test them on the wafer. There's all sorts of
but you know, you get the idea.
But the point is that the yields on the cell processors are abysmal, and by abysmal, and I'm not kidding, we're talking 5 to 10% of the chips succeed.
So that means you make 100 chips on this wafer, and only like 5 to 10 of them actually work. The rest of them you just throw away.
But you still paid for making 100 of them.
Imagine if at the Ford factory where they make Mustangs, if they made 100 Mustangs and then only 5 of them worked, and they had 95 broken Mustangs that they couldn't do anything with except recycle for materials.
Or imagine you're in the Bronx and want to buy some falafel, and you give the guy money, and there's a 95% chance that he says, no falafel for you, try again.
It sucks.
Yeah, but I mean,
that could be why the PlayStation 3 is so expensive, despite not being that much more powerful than other stuff.
Well, I mean, yields tend to be a very tricky business, and the information about yields in factories tends to be very well guarded. I happen to know a lot of this because I worked in the factory where all this was going down. And it's finally been released that the yields are so low, and a lot of people are saying that the cell chips just can't be made efficiently, and that there's really no solution that's going to come anytime in the near future. And all I have to say about this now is that either IBM is losing a lot of money on this, or Sony is losing a lot of money on this.
I'm betting that Sony is losing the money.
Yeah, because honestly, there's other things I can't talk about, but IBM is not stupid. I don't think IBM cared at all if the PlayStation 3 was successful or not.
The thing that I got is way back in the day when the word cell chip first came around, the idea was that instead of having a CPU, you would have like a GPU and a physics PU and an audio PU, and that they would all kind of work together in sort of this, you know, communication way, like a bunch of cells. And that way, instead of having a central processing unit, one big powerful chip, you just have a whole mess of chips that were all kind of weak, but combined, all working together, they would form some sort of living, working
there was
organism.
Actually a lot of confusion in the outside world as to what cell meant, because no one was very clear on it. It became almost a buzzword.
Yeah, and now it seems like it doesn't really mean anything except a different architecture other than PPC and x86 and etc.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of trouble with it. Someone's taken a bath, and I don't think IBM cares, because honestly,
You said taking a bath.
I get the impression. Why is saying taking a bath bad? What, you're busting my balls here?
It's not bad. It's just...
You're busting my balls.
It's just humorous.
Why you gotta bust my balls? Okay.
Because you didn't take a bath.
Yeah, we're always silly on Thursdays. Anyway, my guess, my uninformed... me just guessing out of the air, this is not factual anyway, opinion, is that the PlayStation 3 and the Sony orders were largely just kind of a test of the cell chips and a way to recoup some of the cost of R&D, and I think cells are going to find a lot of applications in other arenas, and Sony is just getting fucked over this.
Okay.
I note this only because I know that a lot of people I talked to while I worked there who were higher up than me or who knew more about the manufacturing process than me, I would always say things because I always knew all the news that I could know from the outside world. In fact, my department has talked to me a few times complaining that they don't know what's going on anymore because I'm not there. I told them, read FARC. But I would say things like, the PlayStation 3 is going to fail for these reasons, or I heard that the PlayStation 3s aren't doing well because of this. And I'd say something like, that's really going to hurt IBM's bottom line, isn't it? And they would just laugh, and that was it.
Awesome.
So I think Sony is really just not going to come out so well.
Yeah, I mean, if I make engines, and some car is going to use my engine, and I sell those engines to those guys, and then their car doesn't sell, sure, I'm not going to sell any more engines. But, you know, it doesn't work where they make a deal where I'm going to constantly make engines. It's a deal where they say, make this many, and I profit on each and every single order they make. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm running my business improperly. So as long as you take it one order at a time, you can't fail to profit in the manufacturing business.
Now, because I'm not bound by the NDAs anymore, at least I'm not bound by NDAs when it comes to new information that I may discover. I'm only bound by the NDAs that cover information I learned while I was an employee.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll see if I can get some inside sources and find out more about this.
Cool.
Because if I convince someone else to tell me, it's perfectly okay.
It's them breaking the NDA, not you.
Yes.
All right. So my news is that, you know, the RA goes around suing everyone.
Yeah, they sued a bunch of mommies and old ladies and kids and dogs.
Now, there was a lady in who lives close to us. She lives in, like, Poughkeepsie or somewhat, and she was fighting. And some other lady, I think, in Oregon was fighting.
Yep.
But there is one woman in Oklahoma named Debbie Foster.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes rushing down the plain.
You mean where the RAA fails in the court.
That was lame.
That was lame.
That was bad.
I couldn't think of anything that rhymed better, but
looky mighty.
Yes. So she fought the RAA. They said, what they did is they came up to her, of course, and they said, settle the case for $5,000. She said, nah, you know what? I'm going to go fight you in court. So she said, RAA, you must provide, you know, dates and the names of the files I downloaded and all this kind of evidence. You know, evidence. And the RAA said, yeah, we can't provide that information. We don't have any evidence, basically.
Yep, they gave up.
So, Debbie Foster filed a motion for summary judgment, which basically says, hey, judge, they don't have any evidence. End this shit.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of the mechanics in Burning Wheel, dismiss. You just go up to the judge and basically say, this case is stupid and it's obvious. Please throw it out. And the judge can say yes or no.
Now, before the judge had a chance to say yes or no, the RAA said, you know what? Since we got no evidence, we out. And the court said, all right, you're out with prejudice.
Now, that is something that judges can do. There's a lot of situations where they can do it. But if you dismiss a case, it's like, all right, the case is done. If you dismiss it with prejudice, it's the judge officially saying that not only is this done, but you're an idiot.
Now, let me read this sentence here. In his opinion, Judge Lee R. West wrote, because this court finds the plaintiff's voluntary dismissal with prejudice services as a complete education of the issues set forth in their complaint and acts as a bar to further action on their claims, the court concludes the matter has been finally educated in the defendant's favor.
I think you mean adjudicated.
Oh, you're right. Adjudicated.
You got owned.
All right. Which represents a judicially sanctioned material alteration in the legal relationship between Deborah Foster and the plaintiff, Ms. Foster, is therefore the prevailing party for purposes of the Copyright Act. And that also means the RAA has to pay for the legal fees of Debbie Foster.
See, I wish they'd sue me. I have a lawyer ready. I'm just waiting for someone to sue me at this point.
Yeah, I don't have a lawyer, so I don't really want to be sued so badly.
Yeah, yeah, but I just note again, because I've said this a bunch of times, but for all the fire and fury of the RIAA and the MPAA suing people, they haven't won, as far as I know, any case. Every single case they have brought, every single lawsuit has either settled out of court, or if the person had the cojones, the testicular fortitude to fight, they always win because the RIAA's case is bullshit.
Yep, and they got no evidence.
I mean, honestly, even if you upload and download files, there is really no way to prove in a court of law that that was the case. And the amount of effort and energy the RIAA would have to put forth to actually even come close to securing a judgment in their favor would be more than the money they could ever get out of the person.
And especially when you consider the number of cases they're doing, if everyone fought, they basically wouldn't have enough legal power to actually do all those cases. They only have enough legal power to do all those settlements, because settlements are easy. It's give us money or else. Okay, here you go. If they actually had to fight all those cases in court, they'd have to just give up most of them. And they probably lose all of them.
The moral here is very simple. If you are sued and you know you're in the right, or you know that you will win, or you have testicular fortitude, fight. You'll probably win.
Yeah, don't be a wuss. All right.
Yeah, don't be a menace.
Since the beginning of time, humans have sought to express their innermost thoughts, their deepest desires. Van Gogh, Picasso, caveman number 17. All were overlooked in their time, yet their works went on to be praised as masterpieces. And from that great tradition...
Whoa, hold it! What if you're interested in current art trends or want advice on how to create art on the computer? Find out about helpful online tutorials to improve your skill? Hear insightful interviews with artists that are still alive and kicking? Or find out how to get started in art trades or commissioning?
I don't really know. Maybe I can find you a website. I'm not really cut out for that sort of thing.
Some people need the classics. For them, we have museums. For everyone else, there's the Artist Alley podcast. Come by and see us at www.candycornstudios.com.
Things of the day.
Any things today?
I got a thing. This is actually a new thing. I'm not copping out with one of my retro things, which means I couldn't find a thing. There's this video out, and it happened.
Newsflash, Rim can't find his thing.
You know what? When I buy a Wii, that'll all be taken care of. So there's a video floating around, and this was on live news this morning. Like, it just happened. Some Fox reporter is in Lebanon.
No, he wasn't.
Or no, he's
in Lebanon.
He's in the Gaza Strip.
Yes.
I just remember that because the fighting right now is in Lebanon, mm-hmm. mostly. But anyway, he's in the Gaza Strip, and there's a Israeli tank division or brigade or something right over the hill, like just out of camera range. And he's there covering the story. And, you know, he's just there in the most open field, no one around, wearing his little flak jacket. And he's talking about, you know, there's Israeli troops right there, and he's live on the air. And then someone who is most likely an Israeli troop starts shooting at him. Yeah. And the funny thing is, he runs away and it cuts back to, like, the guys and two guys and the girl who were at the Fox studio. And the one woman's like, run away, hide, run away, run away, like, yelling at the guy to, like, get out of the way. And then it's all over and the one guy is like, war zone, whatever. And then the stupid guy.
Oh, the stupid guy.
There's a guy sitting on the right of the screen. I don't know who any of these Fox News anchors are, but this guy, not the brightest. He has a kind of a sloping forehead, and he starts saying, like, why would they shoot at him? He has press written clearly on the front and back. You could see it. And the smart guy is like, it's a war zone. They were far away, and they saw a guy with something that might have looked like a weapon. You just shoot at him. And he's like, but it had press written all over it. But, and the guy's like, bad people shoot at anyone they see. And then the guy's like, but it was Israel. And then the smart guy just didn't say anything. And then they cut away. And the guy's like,
if that guy still has his job, wow.
And the fact that after the guy said bad guys shoot at people, and then later the guy's like, really? And it was just this, I really can't describe how dumb this guy looked.
Wow, this guy is real stupid.
More to the point, if you're ever a press person in a war zone and you're filming live, don't say where any troops are because they're going to shoot you.
The thing is, I don't think that they heard the guy saying.
No, definitely not. But there's a good chance that, I mean, Israel, I know for a fact, is probably watching any live news they see to make sure that there's no intelligence leaking out. And I wouldn't be surprised if the guy had kept reporting or something, if they would have just shelled the area.
Yeah, I mean, they have planes everywhere. They can just go boom anytime they want, anywhere they want.
Because, I mean, the situation going on now is a lot like the Six-Day War, where Israel has complete and total air superiority, so no one else really has a chance.
We'll see what happens. I'm just glad I'm on this side of the world.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of crazies over there, and I feel bad for the non-crazies that are over there.
Because there's a lot of non-crazies over there.
Yeah, those non-crazies, escape. Escape over here.
Yeah.
If you're not crazy, then you won't mind doing that.
I mean, for every time on the news you see, like, a bunch of Palestinians dancing around a burning American flag, there's twice as many Palestinians sitting in their houses going, God damn it, they're at it again.
Yeah, and, you know, every time you see, like, Israeli soldiers marching in somewhere, you know, shooting at people, there are a bunch of Israeli people sitting at home playing video games going, God damn it, I don't...
Yeah, so you got a news...
Yeah, I do. Well, a thing of the day.
Oh, yeah, it's things of the day time.
So at USC, which I guess is University of South Carolina, I'm not sure, there's the vice president of the student council, went away to Washington to do some talking, I guess. I don't know what about. Something lame. Anyway, while he was away, the rest of the student council filled his office with balloons.
Now, one, this is an awesome prank that I've pulled more than once in my life on people. And two, the thing of the day that Scott is about to describe is much like the video of the dude attacking those kids who were skateboarding, an example of what is wrong with this country.
Well, wrong with people,
yeah,
I think.
Wrong with people who are indignant and annoying and able to be annoyed.
Right. Now, the first problem is when you pull a practical joke, right, what you want to do is you want to have a lot of people there. And when the joke is pulled, you need to have those people immediately laughing hysterically nonstop, or else it doesn't work.
Unless it's one of those subtle Andy Kaufman-style jokes.
Yeah, but those don't really work so well, you know, in general.
Well, they work really well. The problem is not many people get to see the result.
Yeah.
Or they're a long-term thing, like you screw with a guy over the course of several months.
Yeah, anyway. So, obviously, if we had done this to someone, everyone would have gone, ah! And if, like, it happened to you, you would just go, oh, you got me. All right, let's pop all these balloons.
Yep.
Now, this guy obviously has a pole longer than 10 feet long up his ass. There is no question. And he goes in and, he's already mad about something. Maybe he knows the balloons already. And he goes in and he opens the door and he starts yelling at everyone. He's like, ah, it's not funny.
The best part is when he's like, the one guy who's standing there's just laughing hysterically. And he's like, you don't think I'm serious? Look at me being serious. Look at me being serious. And everyone's
he's like,
just,
this is a waste of the students' money, blah, 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 blah.
And at this point, everyone stops laughing because they're like, they realize that, wow, this guy's just a giant douche.
Yeah, it's like you can't stop laughing or else that's what helps these people out. You have to keep laughing, even if it's not funny anymore. Keep laughing because it's so much better if a guy is yelling and screaming seriously and you just keep laughing, then it makes him feel stupid. If you actually shut up, then it puts him above you and it's like, oh.
Though then this guy starts arguing with these people like, this was a waste of money, of student money. And they're like,
yeah, who paid for these balloons? He's like, we paid for them. They're like $80 for balloons. Big deal. Then he's like, well, where'd the air come from?
Air's not free.
Yeah.
He says that.
He does say that.
He says that.
This is a guy with no sense of humor. And these are the people that I say are the worst people on earth. People who are just no sense of humor, you're a bad person.
Well, there have been multiple Canadian, or I don't know why I said Canadians. There have been multiple comedians out there who have made jokes to the effect of all the problems in the Middle East come down to the fact that the people involved in these problems just have no sense of humor.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really it. If you have a sense of humor, it's very hard for you to do evil things.
And the better your sense of humor is, the harder it is for you to do evil things.
Or in the very least, even if you can do evil things and laugh about it like a maniacal serial killer.
Yeah, I think,
killer,
what was Lewis Black's joke? Like, you know, you go up to someone and you say, yeah, if you go and become a suicide bomber, then when you get to heaven, there's a bunch of virgins. You know, but someone who actually doesn't have a sense of humor and believes that, well, now you got a scary dude.
Yep. Plus, by the converse, anyone who has a sense of humor is much more easily able to deal with problems. I mean, say you're walking into a movie and you drop your drink. Someone with a sense of humor would go, ah, ha, ha, and maybe make a self-deprecating joke. Mm-hmm. Someone without a sense of humor will, that's the end of the world. My drink! Son of a bitch! Damn it!
Or even worse, let's say a guy with the sense of humor, you know, is walking down the hallway and he bumps into someone and they spills, and the soda spills on both of them. If the both guys have a sense of humor, they go, oh, shit, yeah, we're all wet. All right, let's go wash it off. All right.
Talk about a sticky situation.
If they don't have a sense of humor, it's going to be a fist fight. So, you know, when someone...
You know what? That's great, because then everyone else around with a sense of humor gets to watch a fist fight.
Yeah, the problem is sometimes if it's more than a fist fight, like in the Middle East and such...
Well, yeah, yeah.
Other people nearby get hurt. I mean, what if it was a bomb fight? Yeah, it's not so good in the movie theater.
See, why can't Hezbollah just sneak into Israel and instead of blowing someone up, just throw a water balloon at someone and run away?
Go to the Knesset and fill it with balloons.
You know what? If that happened, if terrorists started doing things like that, like instead of blowing up a building, go and set off a bunch of balloons in the building or some sort of giant prank in the building that says, one,
go fill the White House with golf balls.
Because think about this. In one go, it says, I could have blown you up, but I didn't. And two, it's funny.
Yep.
Hey, you get your point
across.
That's
what we need to do. We need to start an organization of comedic terrorism.
Prankerists.
We go and we'll fill the Empire State Building with whipped cream.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, so yeah, watch this guy and despise him. And if you ever meet someone like this, make sure you,
laugh.
Deprecate them.
Actually, I remember a book I read when I was in middle school, and I don't remember what it was called or anything, but it basically involved, I think it was Poseidon or Zeus.
Poseidon's such a prick.
I know, Poseidon's the biggest.
But he's the awesomest.
What? Poseidon's just an asshole.
I know, that's why he's so awesome.
I only get away with saying he's an asshole because I don't go on the ocean often. He can't get me so easily. You can bet that I'll be singing a different tune if I'm on a ship with Odysseus.
Yeah, that's right.
But I forget if it was Poseidon or Zeus or exactly what it was, but there's this book about, you know, modern world and this Greek god wakes up and he's like, hey, I'm back. And, you know, what are the ramifications of that? And in the end, it gets to the point where the reason he left in the first place way back was that he took over a village. And the villagers realized, eventually, like, the villagers drove him away by laughing at him. Like, they were like, you're just this washed up old god. And the village laughed at him, and then he just killed them all and went to sleep. And the end of the book involves everyone just laughing at this god again to try to make him go away. And he finally realizes, oh, and then he just leaves.
Yep. That sounds like a good lesson to me.
You gotta do to people like that what the people in that book in that village that was fake did to Zeus or possibly Poseidon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm. I wish I knew what book it was or what it was actually about.
If someone knows the book, tell us.
Yeah.
I want to read it.
The book wasn't that good.
Oh.
Seriously.
Never mind.
It wasn't
don't
like...
Don't tell us, because then we might read it by accident.
It wasn't like, what are the socio-political ramifications of gods coming back? It was like, here's a pulp story about a god coming back. It was all right, I guess. I don't know.
You know, Lensman's actually turning it out to be kind of a pulp story, but it's good.
Yeah, wait till you see the fucking anime.
Yeah, yeah, well...
We've got it. We can watch it right now.
Well, we're not gonna. We're gonna wait till I finish reading all these goddamn books.
I know the folks over at Anime World Order have seen Lensman.
Yep.
I've seen it like 6 times.
Well, we're gonna cover it all, so you guys just wait for us to read those books and... Yeah,
we should finish that Tezuka stuff first.
Yeah, we should. All right.
All right, so today's Thursday, you know, talk about anything day. And we had a bunch of ideas. We're gonna talk about logical fallacies, but we're gonna wait a little bit on that. Though... Mad props to all of you in the forums who have been arguing by means of fallacies, as in pointing fallacies out in other people. Because not to flame the guy whose name is Blastflame, but that was a terrible argument.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you contradicted yourself.
You can't come in.
You're hypocritical.
Your precedents were all begged the question. And it was just downhill from there.
Yeah, really.
And the burden of proof was still on you. In fact, it is still on you if you want to keep arguing.
Yeah, so I think he's pretty much given up at this point. It'd be interesting to see if he has anything more to say.
I forget who it was. I think it was the Goth Father, but I can't say offhand, who just posted. He didn't say anything. He just quoted this dude. And then he was like, fallacy of accident. And I almost laughed out loud at work. That was like the most awesome thing. It made my day.
Yep, so keep that up.
But we decided we would tell another geek fable.
Oh, it's a geek fable. Wow, when's the last time we did a geek fable?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, because it's been a while since A How to Not Suck also.
Yeah, and this is kind of both, but it's more of a fable because we're not going to talk about how to do this, though that would be a good episode.
Yep.
We're going to talk about what happened when we did it.
All right, so let's start. We're both living in Colony.
Yep, Colony Manor in a really nice apartment as far as RIT apartments go in Rochester.
Yep. And Rim moved out to go to here.
Yeah, well, all around here. To work at IBM, I lived in like 5 different places.
Yep. And you just kind of put your stuff in storage somewhere, right?
Yeah, I put some of my stuff in storage. I put a lot of my stuff at Emily's house.
Yeah, that's right, Emily's house.
Yep.
In
the
basement.
I had a lot of stuff in Rochester. I had a lot of stuff still in our apartment that Scott was living in with Kevin.
Yep, that's right. There was stuff in the apartment. There was stuff in Emily's basement. There was stuff in storage.
And in addition, you had stuff in your house and stuff in Colony, and I think you had stuff in storage.
Yeah, well, what I did is I took all of the stuff that I actually cared to keep, and the stuff that I needed on a day-to-day basis I brought to Connecticut when I left our RIT like a year later. The stuff that was important but I didn't need day-to-day, I put in storage in Rochester in one of those store-to-door boxes. And the stuff I didn't care about, I just left with Kevin. I said, oh, it's not, I don't really care about it anymore.
And also all my furniture we left there. Well, most of it.
Yeah, the stuff we didn't care about. Yeah. So what we did, we finally, I was living in Connecticut and Rim was living in around here.
Yep, I think we've told the story of how we found our giant house and got it.
Yeah, so we found this place and we decided to rent it. We signed the papers and it was time to move in.
So now we're sitting in our house, our empty house, and we're like, all right, now we have to get all of our shit.
Yep.
And all I have to say is that it was quite an ordeal.
Moving sucks.
Now, the worst part is it could have been so much easier.
It could have been if we would have hired some guys and paid more money.
Well, here's the thing. There are a whole bunch of companies that will come to your house, pack up everything you own, take it to your new house, and unpack it all, or at least put it all in the proper room and then leave.
They cost a fortune.
Here's the thing. They don't cost that much.
But they cost more than what we got.
Not that much more, actually. I got some quotes.
Hundreds of dollars,
whatever. That would have been so worth it.
Yeah.
And plus, we get big discounts from RIT, and I got an IBM discount. But every single one of them, because
I called
like 10 of these companies. And every one of them was like, yeah, this will be great. They were like, how far are you moving? I was like, about 320 miles. They're like, oh, that'll be great, quote. And it wasn't a bad price at all. And then they were like, all right, from where to where? And I was like, Rochester, New York to Beacon, New York. One end of New York to the other. And then they'd be quiet. And none of them would do it. Apparently, none of these companies will ship your stuff within a state. They will only go over state lines.
I don't know what people do if they have to move like across Texas or from the north of California to the south.
You know what? The same thing we did. Suck.
Yeah, so I don't know why that is. If anyone does know why, tell us.
Yeah, kind of like how come in New York City they give everyone a straw no matter what you buy? Why do people do that?
I don't know. Anyway, so what we did is we went to Rochester where much of the goods were. And we rented a truck.
Now, I rented a 14-foot budget moving truck.
Now, that's a pretty good-sized truck. It would be a tight fit for all our stuff, but it would have been okay.
Yeah, plus there were some things like the couches we were just going to throw away.
Yeah, we were going to throw away a lot of the big stuff, so it wasn't a big deal.
And also it was cheap, and it was pretty much the largest truck I would have felt comfortable driving.
Yeah.
We get there, and as I pull up, I notice that there's nothing but 24-foot trucks. As in, not a truck, but it's almost a semi. It is a giant tractor, like, just, oh my God, kind of deal.
It wasn't a trailer, but it was a big truck.
Yeah, it's one of the...
Any bigger would have been a tractor trailer.
Yeah, but it massive. Like, I had a lot of trouble with this thing, but I'll talk about all that.
Yeah, the thing is that they reserve the right to give you a bigger truck for the same price. You know, they won't give you a smaller truck for the same price because that's ripping you off. But if you want, a pickup truck, they can just give you like a moving van at the same price as a pickup truck.
So now we've got this truck and we're in downtown Rochester and Scott wouldn't drive it and Pete wouldn't drive it. So I had to
Pete
drive this
thing. Pete can't drive.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, he wouldn't drive it.
Of course. He couldn't drive
it. And you were just afraid to drive it.
I wasn't going to drive it. I wasn't going to be held responsible for something that was rented in your name.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you could have rented it.
No.
Yeah, you could. Well,
I wasn't going to.
Was?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm driving this giant truck. I ran over how many curbs and, like, waste paper bins on the side of a corner and bumping into things. This thing was massive. And it took me a long time to realize that when you're driving a truck that big, you have to practically go past any street you want to turn down and then do this really sharp kind of turn to get onto it. And it was just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we rented this thing and all told, it cost us over $1,000 for the truck and the diesel fuel.
Anyway, we had to go around filling this truck with our shit. So we went to Colony. And
yep.
We emptied that out.
We got everything in, except we took the love seat, but we had a big couch that was nasty, and we just told Kevin he could keep it. I think he just threw it away.
Yeah, the thing was is that it was kind of good that we got this giant truck because we were able to put so much more stuff in it, and we didn't have a problem fitting it in because it was so much more space than we needed. We just kind of kept loading stuff in with no worries about running out of space.
Yep, like with the smaller truck, it would have all fit, but we would have had to pack it all like specially and planned it all out, and it would have taken a long time.
With the giant truck, we just kind of tossed shit in until we were done.
Yep, so then we got all of our stuff from Colony. That took hours, and it was tedious and painful, and everything was heavy.
Then we went to the place where my stuff was stored.
Yep, which meant I had to drive around downtown Rochester again.
Which sucked.
That was
It was
awesome.
Right near the airport. We should have known. But anyway, we got there, and it was actually pretty simple. We drove the truck up to the box as close as we could, and I didn't have so much stuff in the box, and we just kind of emptied the entire contents into the truck. And it didn't really take long at all. It was like, oh, we're done.
Then I had to back that goddamn truck out of that place. I was so afraid I was just going to like mow down a bunch of nuns.
That would have been awesome. Anyway.
Well, I wouldn't want to get nun juices all over it.
Yep, yep, yep.
All right, then we had to drive the truck all the way out to Leroy, which isn't so far. It was like a 40-minute drive. So I couldn't speed.
At this point, I was no longer in the truck.
Yeah, Scott just drove back to our house at this point, basically.
Yep, I took the car, and I was like, see ya.
So me and Pete are driving this truck to Leroy, to Emily's house, to get like things like my giant bed, which I couldn't leave in the apartment because Kevin needed a place to put his bed. And for anyone who doesn't know me, my bed is a giant-ass queen-size like cherry oak bed with a giant like double-thick pillow top, and the bed is huge.
It's just a queen-size bed. It's not that big.
Well, no, tall-wise, it's huge. Yeah. I mean, the mattress is like almost 2 feet thick.
That's about average for a mattress.
And then the box spring separately is another foot.
That's how box springs are, yeah.
Yeah, well, my bed is almost a foot taller than your bed.
Yeah, that's because the frame of my bed is set lower onto the ground.
Yeah, it's this giant-ass wood bed, and it's a big headboard and a footer and all that stuff. And it's old as hell. There's a cool story about it. Like, it's from my family from way, way, way back. And, like, just stuff like that that I couldn't keep in the apartment. Additionally, they had a giant couch that they didn't want anymore. And the couch had a lot of attachment. I mean, they'd had it for a long time. And Emily had very fond memories of laying on that couch when sick or just hanging around in the couch when she was young. And it's a pretty good couch, and it folds out into a bed. So they asked me, you want the couch? And I said, yeah, sure.
Because we had just left Kevin the shit couch.
So, all right, now we have a good couch. We don't have to buy one.
We were going to buy a couch if we didn't, you know.
This couch is 1,000 times better than the couch we left behind, and it was free.
Yep. So, hey, better than buying one. Let's take it.
So Pete and I go to pick it up and carry it out of Emily's family's house, at which point, I forget which one of us said it, but we said, that thing's a fucker. It weighed an infinite number of pounds.
I mean, it was a couch and a bed with a metal frame in it. And
yeah,
a
the
mattress.
Metal frame is like steel. The whole thing is steel. It's just it.
And the big heavy wood and God, and it's so cumbersome because of the way the sofa bed is inside of it. And
like you got to be careful or it'll fall out while you're carrying it. And it was so heavy that we could barely lift it.
But you finally got it into the truck.
Yes, after much doing. And then, you know, we tooled around in Rochester for a while. And then Pete and I had to drive this truck all the way back to Beacon. Now, the thing is, Pete originally, I was going to go by Albany, drop Pete off at his house, and then continue to Beacon, where Scott and I would then unload the truck.
You were going to stop and go driving around Albany in this giant truck.
Now, I hadn't even considered at this point unpacking. I hadn't really thought that through, and neither had Scott. We just didn't really think about that. So here Pete and I are, and we get on the throughway, we're about to go, and then Pete hems and haws, and then he eventually says, you know what? He's going to skip work on Monday. He'll just come back to Beacon with us. Hooray, which means
now we don't have to drive the truck all around some crazy roads.
Well, yeah. Instead, I got to take the fun Route 17 way through the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So we're driving this massive truck as fast as it can go through the mountains of New York.
The Poconos.
Yep. On semi-windy, not quite a freeway yet roads.
Make your jokes about poking people with noses.
Yeah. I had to get gas at one point because it's real heavy, and that thing had a giant diesel tank, but damn did it use diesel real quick, especially how fast I was trying to make it go.
And it was carrying shit.
Yeah, lots of stuff.
Like the fucker.
So I had an adventure going to a truck stop because I was trying to find diesel fuel and no one had it. I eventually had to get off, go to a truck stop where I found a diesel fuel thing, and truck stops don't work like gas stations. There was a thing that I thought I could put my credit card in and it didn't work. And eventually, I realized that was a special trucker card. And I had to go into the truck stop, tell her how many gallons of diesel I wanted. I didn't know. She looked at the truck and guessed how much I would need. It was like something sick, like 30 gallons.
That's twice as much as my car holds.
And there was like a timer thing where it filled up automatically. So while that was going on, I went into the truck stop and, you know, washed my face in the shower room. And I saw a bunch of people watching TV and I got some food and Pete was hanging out. And we didn't talk to any truckers. We wanted to get back on the road, but That was an interesting experience in a truck stop.
Mm.
Maybe I'll talk about truck stops someday.
You have so much experience in one truck stop.
No, I've been in a total of 4 truck stops in my life. I have showered in 2 truck stops.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's this one truck stop in Canada that I stopped at a bunch of times, and one time I just showered there.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, we get back on the road. Now, the thing didn't really have a CD player. It just had a radio. So we're trying to listen to the radio, and there were Phantom Rock. Because we'd hit scan, right? Where it would sit on a station for 10 seconds, and then we'd go to the next station, but if you hit scan again, it'll stop.
Meanwhile, I'm sitting in Beacon going,
Yeah, in a mostly empty house with nothing to sleep on or anything. At least the electricity was on by that point.
Yeah, I was doing good.
So, now we'd be sitting there, it would be like crap music, guy yelling about Jesus, crap music, another guy yelling about Jesus, Zeppelin. God yelling about Jesus. And we had really slow reaction times because we were just kind of cruising. So we'd get back to the guy yelling about Jesus. We're like, hey, Zeppelin. So I'd hit back. And it would go back to the previous guy yelling about Jesus. Then I'd hit next and would go to the next guy yelling about Jesus. And we couldn't find the rock station that was just there. And that wouldn't have been notable, except that that happened like 1,000 times.
There's probably just one or two really weak rock stations.
But they'd come in on the scan, and then when we try to go back, they wouldn't be there. And even if I went manually, I just couldn't find it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what it was. I was getting kind of desperate for some non-crap music or non-guy yelling about Jesus. We ended up listening to a guy yell about Jesus for a while.
And it didn't convert you.
It was mostly just funny.
Yeah. All right.
So we finally get home, and we park it, and we get out, and Scott's standing at the door like, and you said something like, what took you guys so long? And I think I flipped you off.
Something like that.
And then Scott says, oh, Pete. And I was like, yeah, Pete came. And Pete's like, yo. All
right.
Now, for anyone who doesn't know Pete, we've talked about Pete before. Pete's been on our show because Pete is a scientist. And Pete is our resident Geek Night science expert.
Mm-hmm.
We consult him and occasionally our good friend Lisa, who is also a scientist, whenever there is some sort of sciencey truthiness we need to know about.
And Scott. And the other Scott.
Oh, yeah, Scott Johnson. Pharmaceuticals and also science.
Yes.
We know many scientists.
I'm a computer scientist.
Yeah, whatever. I'm a usability engineer.
Whoa.
Oh. All right. So then we open up the back of the truck and we're like, all right, we got to unpack this thing. And the thing right there is the fucker. So this is the point at which Scott and I realized, looking at this thing, that if Pete were not there at that moment and Scott and I had to unload this truck by ourselves, there would be no Geek Nights because we would be dead. The police would have found 2 gangly, thin geeks crushed to death under a massive steel couch behind a budget truck on Conklin Street in Beacon.
That is what they would have found, yes.
Even with Pete, it took us like a half hour to get this thing into the house.
It was just ridiculous. And even then, because we had to go upstairs to get shit into our house.
Yeah, because our house is big, and basically our front door and our back door, there's a deck on each of them, and the deck is up about a half a story. So it's nice because we have these big decks and they're elevated. You know, the zombies can't get us. All we have to do is destroy the stairs and we have a zombie fortress.
But, yeah.
So a half hour at least. I'm not kidding.
On its way into the house, we actually damaged one of the walls in the house.
Yeah, I mean, we had enough time just getting the thing off the truck. Like, we got it off the truck and now it's laying on its side in the street and we're standing there like, fuck this thing. Fuck it. Let's just leave it here. Like, let's just leave it. We don't know where it came from. And we finally get it up, and we get it, and we roll it into the house, because we can't really fit it through the door so well. So it's, like, up on end, and it comes into the house, and then it leans over, and then it goes bam into the wall, and just puts this gash right there in the house we've just moved into. We've just put a giant security deposit down on.
And we put a dent in the wall.
Within an hour of me coming to the house, we've already damaged it.
Fucker.
Luckily, we fixed the damage pretty easily, but we finally got the couch in, and I was done. I really didn't want to unpack anything else. I would have been fine with just that couch.
Yeah, but I think we did eventually bring the rest of the shit in the house.
Yeah, we decided to unpack the whole thing that night because we didn't want to. Nothing would have been worse than going to sleep, waking up, and realizing we still had all of that shit to unpack.
And of course, not sleeping on beds.
Yeah. Even though I didn't actually put my bed together, I just slept on the floor.
I slept on my bed.
Yeah, and we didn't unpack. It took us about 2 weeks to unpack everything we owned to the point that we could live in our house as opposed to just living in a sea of garbage.
Yeah, and now, like, even though I might want to move to somewhere else, you know, because I have to drive pretty far to work, the effort of moving all this shit out of this house and into some other house is so great that is a huge deterrent to moving anywhere.
Yes, I mean, all told, it took us multiple days of concerted effort, weeks of planning, lots of phone calls, over $1,000, plus the agony of driving a 24-foot fucking truck through the mountains and dropping a couch on us.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, the moral of tonight's show...
Wheel of morality, turn, turn, turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn.
Don't move.
Keep your ass wherever it is. Just park it and don't move.
Or if you're gonna move, either pay a bunch of people to do it all for you, or sell everything you got, move somewhere, buy new shit.
Exactly. Don't move with more than you can fit in, say, the trunk of your car.
I mean, good God.
You know, or maybe if you can rent a U-Haul, that's not so bad. But now, if you have to move, like, a lot of big things, either pay a shit ton of money to have guys do it for you so that you don't have to do anything, or... don't move.
Now, there are a lot of little corollaries to this. I mean, one thing is that I was a very much a pack rat. Like, I would keep anything that I thought would ever be interesting or useful. And after moving, I threw away a good quarter of the things I owned. Because they weren't useful, they were in the way, and if I ever move again, I'm going to have to lug that crap around somewhere and stick it, I'm going to take it out of one closet, put it in a box, go to another house, take it out of that box, put it back in a closet.
Exactly.
So I threw away, like, all my DS game
cases.
Yeah,
it's like, I threw away a lot of shit, you know. There are certain things I keep, but, you know, I keep it limited, and there's a lot of shit that I would have kept when I was in, say, high school, that now I just go, huh, this is trash.
Yep.
The collector mentality is pretty much dead. And if you're a collector, either A, become not a collector and sell your shit on eBay, or B, don't move.
I mean,
good
honestly,
God.
Like, books are the big thing. Now, I own so many books, but I've lost track or lost or destroyed probably more than half of the books I've ever owned.
Well, you tend to just eat books while you read them. It's like, I think you just...
Well, honestly...
I think your hands have, like, these book grinders on them.
Most of my books, I don't. The books that you've seen me eat are the ones that are very, very large. Because small books I don't eat. My small books are all in good condition. But, like, The Count of Monte Cristo...
Yeah, so I was just going to use as an example.
The Count of Monte Cristo 1 is the longest book I ever read, and in, like, all the way through. I've skimmed books that were longer, but those were textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
It's the longest, thickest, most number of pages book I've ever read, and in addition, it wasn't bound so wonderfully, and I read it over a fairly long period of time. That book saw some action. But once I read a book, I really completely lose track of it. Like, it doesn't exist anymore. I almost immediately will lend it to someone or leave it somewhere, and I'll probably never see it again.
Mm.
Which is fine, because I love just lending my books away at this point.
Yeah, I lend all my books out and whatever, but yeah, I need a new book shelving solution because I'm starting to buy a lot of manga and trade paperbacks. So, like,
I mean,
now I have like two or three stacks of them on the floor that I got no shelf to put on.
Looky mighty, if I ever get all those books that I owned before I went to college that are currently sitting in my mom's house
aren't
in Arizona.
Aren't most of those just lame D&D books?
No, a lot of them are, but by no means, not even close to the majority. Not even a third.
All right.
Granted, I do own almost every Waterdeep.
Well, how many of them are fantasy novels?
Not that many. Most of the fantasy I read when I was young were actually the Forgotten Realms novels.
Which I just said were the D&D books.
Yeah, I read mostly, well, and like Tolkien, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, of course.
I read a decent amount of, God, I'm not going to talk about this now, but we'll do a show on what we used to read and what we read now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could go on for great deeds, for many, many moons.
If you want to see what I read, just go to APRECHE.listall, LISTAL .com.
Yeah, I'm currently reading Anansi Boys. I just finished The Difference Engine.
I'm currently reading Galactic Patrol, the actual first book in the Lensman series.
I should find the novelization of M.D. Geist and check that out.
Is there a novelization?
Probably not.
Is there a manga?
I think so. I don't know.
You should get
that. I really
don't
know. Remember, my only experience with M.D. Geist is that I saw the first, like, 20 minutes of it, and then I heard that review, which was the funniest thing I've ever heard on a podcast, other than Monkey Tuesday.
All right, so I think this episode's over.
Yeah, though, honestly, I'm really in addition to the moral, you know, don't move, I'm really in no pressing need to move because the only places I could move from here are closer to New York City, which means I'd spend a lot more money, and even though I'd be spending more money, I'd get smaller and smaller houses. And the closer I get to where any place is that I'll work, the smaller my house will be and the more money I'll pay for it.
Yeah, my thoughts on moving are if I get a lot more money, I would like to purchase some larger house, perhaps one with 3 bedrooms or like maybe 3 bedrooms and then like a library or something like that.
What I'd
or
really,
a separate dining room and kitchen.
What I'd really like to have is a house, like a 3 or 4 bedroom house.
A basement.
But in addition to that, I'd like it to have an apartment attached. So a friend could live, or like the guest apartment or something.
Yeah, or a basement of finishedness for awesome gaming and geeking.
But in terms of like the area, I don't see myself leaving the area I'm living anytime soon, just because it's so close to so many places I could commute to if I ever change jobs again.
Yeah, it all depends on my job situation.
You're probably going to get a job. You're going to get a job in the city.
Probably over the next 6 months, and depending on that is what I will do.
Yeah, we're pretty much at the best cost-benefit ratio analysis place we can be for working in the city because we can't really afford to move closer.
And especially since it costs to move, it's really hard to, you know, wherever we are is all, you know, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, plus the fact that our house is really good.
Because even if we find a place that's a little bit better, it's not worth the effort of going to there.
But a place...
It's like if we weren't anywhere yet, if we were still nowhere, we could have chosen a better place maybe.
But a place that is that much better would be so much more. And honestly, all the places that are incrementally closer to New York City that we could afford, it takes longer to commute there than from here.
Yep.
Because there are express trains that go from Poughkeepsie and Beacon right to the city. But if you move to the next few towns down, there aren't.
We'd have to move to Croton.
Yeah, but it's real expensive to live in Croton.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever seen the Croton Harmon train station?
It's pretty fancy.
That is a massive train station. It is.
Well, that's because they also have the rail yards there.
Yeah, but in addition, that is a massive commuter place. I mean, that whole area is just nothing but commuters who make big bucks in the city. And I think we're served better by living further away, having a longer commute. But in addition, having a lot more disposable income, nice smelling air, as opposed to, you know, the Bronx or Brooklyn, which I love the
or
Bronx.
Or Croton, where there's a train yard.
Yeah. And the fact that it's quiet. I mean, I love the fact that I get to New York City and I can go there anytime I want, but yet I can also get away from the city whenever I want.
Yeah. It just, you know, a physical house that was perhaps larger or perhaps where we had the basement is all I really asked for.
Yep.
All we really need is like one extra room and a basement.
Honestly,
that's all I need.
What I really like to do is just get land somewhere in Beacon or nearabouts, like somewhere in this area, and build a house to my own specification.
That would always be good.
Like that would be the most perfect, fantastic thing.
But can't afford.
Not yet. Honestly, I think I've got the credit to get a mortgage at this point.
Yeah, but it's really hard to get a mortgage for a land and building a house.
No, it's really not.
It's easier to get a mortgage for buying an existing house.
It actually really isn't so bad. I know a lot of people who've done it. In fact, my grandpa built the house he lived in.
Yeah, well, if you build the house, that's different.
Yeah, but we can pull it off. It's just a matter of I think we have better things to spend money on right now.
Yeah, almost definitely.
Like all these cons we keep going to.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's Thursday. We're done for the week. Next week, we may or may not do a theme week. We're not sure yet.
If you have any ideas for a theme week,
let us know.
Go to the forums. FrontRowCrew.com.
And of course, Otakon is going to be our big podcast extravaganza. I suggest that anyone who's in the area or anyone who's planning to go to Otakon be aware of that awesome thing we're going to be doing and the parties that we'll be following.
Yep. And I think that covers it.
Yeah, the only other thing is we got to figure out, there may or may not be episodes of Geek Nights the week after Otakon. We're not sure what we're going to do yet. Just a heads up to everyone that there's a tiny chance, the worst case scenario is, there will be no Geek Nights for one whole week.
Then, oh my god.
Then there will be an infinite sea of Geek Nights for the next month.
Probably the best Geek Nights you ever heard.
Yeah, I just can't imagine how much recorded footage we're going to get from that con.
Oh god.
All right, we're out. We'll see you next week. Keep sending the feedback. Don't send us money. And
don't suck.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcast, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.